Welcome to the Insane Asylum.
And welcome back to the Insane Asylum, episode 35, Night of Living Dreads podcast. I'm going to speak Dreads, and as always, I have Mrs. Dreads here, riding shotgun. How are you, Mrs. Dreads?
I'm good.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm sure.
Okay. we're going back to kind of the Night of the Living Dreads roots here, where, you know, we've always talked a lot of serial killers. Past few episodes, we've been doing some haunted stuff, asking some tough questions from a skeptic, like last week, our ghost reel. If you missed that episode, you can go check that out, nightlivingdreads.com. And there are motorcycles in the background. The white coats let us take and open the windows here in the insane asylum, so you will hear passerbys, the sane people. Before we get into that, because we're going to talk a couple articles that I found over at dreadcentral.com. We're going to talk a couple articles. Then, like I said, we're going to talk Jerome Henry, otherwise known as Jerry Brudos, the foot fetish killer. And as always, we got one remarkable little break song for you. But before we get into that, let's get some horror love out there. Gorehounds of Horror on Facebook, best damn horror group on Facebook. Go check them out. Closed group, open group. Go over there and find us both over there. We're there.
Yeah.
Are you there?
I'm there.
You might want to speak up.
I'm there.
Okay. We also have Misfit. Oh, Misfit. I got Brudos on the mind, man.
Something.
Misfit Horror Fiend Club. It's another one. Love the Misfits. Love horror. You have found a home. After Dark, as I always mention, they do a lot of the watch parties, a lot of different horror movies and such. Check them out. And a new one that I started last week, The Slaughterhouse. Slaughter on Wayne, slaughter on Garth.
Oh, my God.
Yes, it's a new group that, I don't know, are you a member over there?
Yeah.
Okay. That just joined. They are very gracious to allow us to post the Night of Living Dreads podcast over there. As long as I give them some horror love. And there it is. Slaughter on Wayne. Slaughter on Garth. And also, can't forget our cannabis-friendly Cannabis Arcade group. It's our non-horror group that we show some love to. Cannabis spell with a K. If you like the Mary Jane, you like to laugh, that's where you want to be. Very fun, open type group.
Yeah.
It's where you can get all your dark humor at. If your reserves are low on dark humor,
right.
Which mine are not. Yeah, check all them out on Facebook. And, of course, Night of Living Dreads, Dreads with no A. is over there as well. And as I mentioned, nightlivingdreads.com, where you can check this episode out as well as all the other ones. And as always, if you find this somehow enjoyable to listen to, please pass it on like it's a venereal disease.
Oh my God. No.
Well, maybe not like that. I mean, you can just simply tell them, hey, check out this podcast I heard, Night Living Dreads. That'll be sufficient. All right, got a couple articles I want to talk about. This one I found not really funny, but just imagine going to a movie, okay, and you're sitting next to, you know, maybe it's a crowded movie. You got some people next to you, and the lights go down, the movie goes on. Okay, movie ends, the lights go up, and the guy next to you is dead. Now, this happened at a viewing in Thailand for Annabelle Comes Home. He was a British national. He was 77 years old. His name was Bernard Channing. He was just on vacation, went to Thailand, decided, hey, 77, you're never too old to like horror, apparently.
Apparently you are.
Apparently you may be. He decided he was just going to go check out a movie. And as the Daily Mail reports, Bernard Channing, 77-year-old tourist from Gedling Knots, wherever that is, had been to see Annabelle Comes Home while on holiday in Thailand. The woman who discovered that he was dead is said to have been shaken and discovering the dead body and shouted for staff who rushed into the room, called emergency services about 8 p.m. their time.
Probably had a heart attack.
I was reading through this, and it doesn't really come out to say.
And in all honesty with that movie, that your heart has to be kind of weak.
Well, right.
If it is a heart attack.
Exactly. It says Mr. Channing was pronounced dead inside the venue, and his covered body was taken away by a side door and loaded into an ambulance. Resident, I'm not even going to try and pronounce this name, who arrived at the cinema after the death, said that the guests were very upset.
Well, duh.
Well, yeah, right. I mean, thanks, Captain Obvious. Like I said, you're sitting there, you're watching a movie, and the guy comes in, maybe he's got popcorn, maybe he's got a drink. Or
maybe he choked on popcorn.
Maybe he did. Well, he saw as much of the movie as I did.
He probably seen more.
Oh, man, a guy that dies in a theater sees more of a movie. You guys remember previous podcasts? I did fall asleep during Annabelle. But how crazy is that?
That's crazy. I can't say I would have been shooken or...
I mean...
I would have felt bad for the guy, but...
I think I would
I'm
have
not
been
be
a
traumatized.
Little taken back. You know, because nobody knows at what point in the movie he died. It could have been in, you know, the very beginning. Nobody was paying attention. They're all watching a movie.
Exactly.
So it could have been in the very beginning. This guy just boom, dead. And
how do we know that we've never been to a movie where somebody died in the theater?
I'm pretty sure I haven't.
Never know.
I think I would. But
well, no, because we leave like right at the beginning. There's still a shit ton of people in
well,
there.
Well, yeah, I mean.
Well, it could be.
I've never heard anything
leaving.
On the news, like, you know, at the rave tonight after the showing of Annabelle, there were three people just dead in their chairs. But I guess it could happen. 77 years old. I mean, hopefully, your heart can take that kind of stuff. I don't know if it was indeed a heart attack, because, again, it does not state in this article from Dread Central.
Yeah.
So who knows? I mean,
no, I'd probably been a little creeped out if he was murdered or
that,
something like that.
Right.
May wake me out a little bit, but
yeah. You look over, the guy's, you know, got blood coming out of his eyes or something. I mean, he's a demon. He's a ghost. Now that place is going to be haunted. Thanks, Channing. All right.
How dare you pass away?
How dare you pass away and ruin a good movie going experience? You're a Freddy Krueger guy, aren't you? Or
I like
girl.
Freddy Krueger.
Yeah. What, one of your favorites, would you say?
Yeah.
Yeah. And what do you think about remakes of this? What did you think about the last one?
I thought it sucked.
Yeah, it did. It did. They have an event coming to Indiana called Horror Hound Weekend. Just a big convention, a lot of stars from horror films. And I think the guy that plays Freddy Krueger in that sucky version
is going to be there. See, I'm just partial to Robert Englund doing it.
I think most people are. I posted this article over there at Gore Hounds of Horror, and one of the other moderators, Chad, he's a big Freddy Krueger guy, and you know, he made a pretty good point. Well, look, why do this for one? Because the last one they tried sucked.
Yeah.
And two, you know, Freddy is a personality.
Right.
And this is not verbatim what he said, but I think I'm going to nail it. He's a personality. He's not just a silent character in a mask. Like,
right.
Like you may see Jason. You can have different people play Jason, you know, but they're because it's mainly, or even Michael Myers, because it's mainly just, you know, body movement and things like that.
Right. But they, even the mask and stuff they've come out with for Freddy just suck.
Yeah. Nobody can hold a candle to old Robert Englund. Now, according to sources at We Got This Covered, they're saying that New Line Cinema is eyeing a director already for a reboot. And this guy's name is Alexandre Aja. He directed Crawl, which is apparently out in theaters now. I haven't even heard of that.
I haven't either.
Yeah. So, but they got their eye on him to take and maybe direct this. I don't know. He is one currently among one of the directors being eyed. Nothing is set in stone as of right now, they say, though, as the studio is also considering other directors, one of whom may end up landing the coveted job instead. So it's not definite.
I
don't know. I'm really not liking it.
I
really do too. I mean, just, you know, unless it has Robert Englund in it.
Yeah.
That's the only way I think that I would even go and see another reboot or any kind of reboot, remake of the original. It has to be Robert Englund for me.
Me too.
Yeah. So now we're going to talk after this little break because I got your favorite band.
Yeah.
The Macabre. We played this band on quite a few of occasions.
You did what? Did you for Ed
Gein? Did I play a song? We did one for Edmund Kemper. They do a song. This is a what they call an extreme metal band. It's a 3-piece band. All their songs, they call themselves murder metal because all of their songs have nothing but serial killers. That's all they sing about. It's all, well, if you want to call it singing.
That's the only positive thing about the band.
Yeah, I like them. I need to get their albums, as a matter of fact. But yeah, we're going to talk Jerome Henry Brudos, otherwise known as Jerry Brudos, the foot fetish killer. I don't know how this guy does it, man, because I can't even look at feet. This guy, unbelievable. Hey, we're going to talk about that right after this nice little ditty by Macabre called the, Fatal Foot Fetish.
Yeah.
The Fatal Foot Fetish.
I knew it was something foot fetish.
Enjoy.
Jerry Brudos was a young boy and when his strange behavior grew. Jerry Brudos had a fascination with women's undergarments and shoes. Jerry Brudos was a foot fetish killer, captivating to inside his freezer, dressed up in heels and he'd beat on. Jerry Brudos, Jerry Brudos, Jerry Brudos, Jerry pregnant, his new wife didn't have a clue. And Jerry Brudos would kill 5 women. He would put the jerk off too. Jerry Brudos was a foot fetish killer, captivating inside his freezer, dressed up in heels that he beat on. Jerry Brudos, Jerry Brudos, Jerry Brudos, Jerry Brudos. We'll be right back.
You like that song?
No.
Why not?
Because, like I said, the best thing about that band is that
they sing about all serial killers.
But other than that,
I don't know. I kind of dig them. Anyway, Night Living Dreads podcast. Playing you some of the shittiest music we can find. Well, according to Mrs. Dreads, that is. I'm Otis B. Dreads. And we are. We're going to talk a little bit about old Jerome Henry Brudos. This guy. I don't know, man. I mean, it almost makes me want to vomit in my mouth to talk about some of the shit that he would do. Only because as much as he loved feet and shoes and things. I don't even like to look at other people's feet, let alone have them touch me. I don't know why. It just disgusts me. And this guy loved it. He was born January 31st, 1939, Webster, South Dakota. Died in 2006 from liver failure. Or liver cancer, I should say. And as I mentioned, he was known as the shoe fetish slayer or the lust killer. Because there are different kinds of, you know, serial killers. You have, you know, your lust killer, your spree killers, your serial killers, which he later became more of, a serial killer. He's got 4 murders under his belt. Not a lot when you think about a serial killer, but the things that he did and how he went about doing this, being a father and a husband and it all happening right at his residence, sometimes where when his wife and children were right upstairs, you know, just having a little dinner, and he's got, you know, victims hanging from the rafters, you know, by means of what they call a come-along. You know, like a ratchet strap type deal that he would, you know, string his victims up. He'd string them up, go upstairs, have dinner with the fam, and come right back.
Go on vacation.
Go on vacation, man. But, you know, like most serial killers, I guess, I'd say most, but, you know, you always have the ones that, you know, like a Ted Bundy, who did not have a bad childhood. He can't remember anything that, you know, really stuck out. He had a very good childhood, and like Ward Cleaver, you know.
Yeah, Ted Bundy.
Yeah. So this, oh Jerry here, he did not have that kind of fortune. He had two brothers, and he was the youngest. He was the youngest of 8. He only had 1 other brother.
Right.
And he was the youngest. And it was said that his mom had such disdain and to the point of hatred because he was a boy.
Yeah, because she wanted a little girl.
She wanted a little girl, right. And so that had to be a little hard on little Jerry. You know, being that, you know, I mean, he was physically abused by his mother. You know, the constant belittling, which sounds quite familiar as we talked Edmund Kemper. A few podcasts back, kind of the same type, you know, situation is what it seems like. His family, it said that his family's, you know, moved around quite a bit, around the Pacific Northwest. And then they finally settled in, Salem, Oregon, around the age of 5. Well, Jerry's out playing, whatnot, decides to go into a junkyard and look around. Just being a boy, you know, looking around. Well, he's trying to be a boy. Comes across some patent leather high heels. And he decides to take them home. Spiked high heel shoes, takes them home. And, you know, starts, you know, wearing them. His mother catches him. Mother, even though she wanted a girl, and it's kind of like little Jerry was kind of trying to oblige. Okay, here you go.
Yeah.
I'll wear girl shoes. You wanted a girl so fucking bad here. I'll wear girl shoes. She did not like that. I guess that would freak some parents out. Would it freak you out? You know, your son comes in, you know, 5 years old wearing high heel shoes.
No.
You know, they're young. But his mother did not like this at all. She took the shoes away from him. He later got them back. He was caught again. So his mother makes a kind of a public display to him, not in public, but literally burns the fucking shoes in front of him. Just kind of freaked him out a little bit. He was also said around that age to steal the shoes of his first grade teacher. He's just running around stealing shoes. He also had a fetish. I don't know if it was right around the time that he was, you know, 5-6 years old. But he also had a fetish for women's underwear. Okay, which is disgusting because there's a lot of nastiness going on inside anyone's underwear. It's just not good.
He may have.
Dirty, yeah. But you might want to think about that one. This guy's a wackadoo.
Yeah.
He would steal underwear from the neighbors, from female neighbors. They would hang him up on their clothesline, and he's a child still, you know, running around stealing women's underwear off clotheslines. Spent his teen years, I should say, in and out of psychotherapy and psychiatric hospitals. Would you ever imagine that? Unbelievable.
Right.
Yeah, right. He began to stalk. So his progression's getting up there. His mother kind of started this, you know, with this, you know, you're a piece of shit, little boy. I wanted a little girl. I didn't want nothing to do with you. And now it's progressing to where he's starting to stalk local women as a teenager. A lot of times just, you know, knocking them down and or choking them unconscious, not killing them, just rendering them unconscious and then just stealing their fucking shoes.
Yep.
And running. That's all he was doing, really, was just assaulting women.
Steal their shoes.
And then steal their fucking shoes. Yeah. So, which is kind of weird. I mean, he wasn't, you know, I don't want to say he wasn't hurting them, because I'm sure it was hurting them at some point. But, I mean, they were able to live to see another day.
Right.
Not so forced, not so much like some of the victims we're going to talk about. But right around the age of 17, he abducted and beat a young woman, threatening to stab her if she did not follow his sexual demands. He was arrested. She had obviously got away. He was arrested. And he was taken to a psychiatric ward. That would have been in Oregon State Hospital. He only spent 9 months there.
Right.
It was found that his sexual fantasies pretty much revolved around the hatred and revenge he had against his mother. And that transpired to women in general.
Right.
So, I mean, the hatred for his mother just kind of manifested the hatred towards all women, because you're all probably going to treat me just like my fucking mother.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, hell, he was a virgin until he was, you know, what, in his 20s or 30s? I mean, he was a young adult, I believe.
He's
23. Yeah, right around there. And so he wasn't what you'd call a ladies' man. He underwent a lot of evaluation, obviously, psychiatric evaluation, and was initially diagnosed with borderline schizophrenia, which that doesn't mean you're on the borderline of being a schizophrenic. What this means is that you have schizophrenic traits, but you also have some of the traits of a borderline personality disorder.
Right.
So, you know, he was hospitalized or institutionalized. And the thing is while he was institutionalized, they would literally let him leave.
Mm-hmm.
Go to his regular school and then come back. This happened around, you know, he graduated in 1957. And then he got into, electronics technician. He was an electronics technician, So far, things are a little shaky for old Jerry. but he did, while working as a technician, at a small radio station, was set up with a young lady, and whom he ended up marrying. Is mm-hmm. her a Rochelle? Cannot think of her name right offhand. He married. She was 17, and he would have two children with her. They settled in Salem as well, in a little suburb, and things got kind of weird right off the rip. Okay. Now, Mrs. Dreds, if I come home one day and say, or let's just say, you know, newly married, and I'm like, you know, Mrs. Dreds, I'm kind of thinking I'm going to need you to do all your housework naked with just high heels on. Sounds like the beginning of a porn.
That'd be funny.
And, you know, I'm going to have to take pictures of you while you're doing this. What would pop into your head? Because it's allegedly said that she didn't really, you know, find anything wrong with this type of behavior.
I would think you were ludicrous.
Right. Boo, bitch, get out the way. Yeah.
Oh. Ain't gonna happen.
So, yeah, it was just, I mean, it didn't seem to bother her at first. I mean, she was young. I get that.
She was a lot younger than him.
Yeah. So, you know, and he was very, very demanding.
Very controlling
and possessive. She didn't complain. She went along with it at first. It was about this time that it stated that, you know, Jerry started complaining about a lot of migraines, a lot of blackouts that he was having. He would... Just what the doctor ordered, he would relieve these symptoms with night prowling raids to steal shoes and lace undergarments. Oh, man. Shoot, I got a headache, Mrs. Dreds. I'll be back. I'm going to go steal some underwear and shoes from the neighbors. That should help out.
Yeah.
He would keep the shoes and the underwear and a lot of times the bodies of some of his victims in his garage. They said... Hey, you know what, Mrs. Brutus, you are not allowed in my garage. He literally set up an intercom system to where she would have to announce herself before coming down there through this intercom system that he would take and you know, he set it up. Here, you want to come in here? You're going to have to let me know. And so that was kind of strange right there. But we're going to talk a little bit about some of these, some of the victims here. And this wasn't like, it, you know, this you know, killing lasted years and years and years. Like some of the, you know, serial killers we've talked about. Some of them just go on, you know, 40 years with, you know, the Golden State Killer, I believe. You know, went 40 plus years before, you know, they had this guy.
Well, he made a dumbass mistake.
Well, he did. True. And as well as Brutus, which we'll talk about
that's
in a little bit.
That's what I'm talking about.
Oh, Brutus did. Yeah. Oh, I thought he was talking about Golden State. It only lasted from 1968, or just about a year.
Right.
Right around January, I think it was, of 68 to about March or May. It was about May, I believe, of 69. So it didn't last long. First one on the list here, Linda Slauson. She was a 19-year-old door-to-door encyclopedia saleswoman. You remember them?
Mm-hmm.
Did you ever have them come to your house?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Who made the mistake of seeing Brutus. He was out apparently doing some gardening. Told her, you know, well, here, yeah. He acted all interested and took her directly to the basement.
Right.
Now, this is before he had his garage.
Right.
Because they did move, and he had a, you know, almost like, you know, the separate from the house.
Right.
He lured her into the basement. Wife and kids are upstairs. Yeah. They're in the house. And he gets her in there and then proceeds to knock her out with a 2x4.
Yeah.
Didn't kill her. He did take and strangle her until she, you know, stopped moving. And then he would dress her in some of the underwear and shoes and other garments that he had stolen from around the neighborhood.
Right.
And he put her body in all kind of provocative poses and then proceeds to take a hacksaw and cut her left foot off.
Yep.
He kept that in the freezer.
Yeah.
Yummy.
He would take it out from time to time.
Yeah.
Put a shoe on it and masturbate.
Oh, man. There's just so many jokes that can be said here. And then turn around and said he dumped the body in the Long Tom River. And by doing that, I'm not sure, it doesn't say here, but I'm not sure if this is the one. A couple of them, he would tie to a transmission and literally take the whole transmission and throw it over while the body is tied to it so it sinks. So that was one of the first ones. Karen Sprinker? Yeah. She was also 19. She was abducted by gunpoint from a parking lot outside of a mall-type area. Mm-hmm. That was in May of 68. He was dressed in women's clothes during this attack. So that's a hint and a half for your ass right now.
To run.
He's not, a small dude, it doesn't look like. I mean, he looks like he's, pretty big guy. This bald-headed guy, dressed in women's clothes, abducts her at gunpoint, and it takes her to his garage. And he made her try on some of his collection of underwear that he had grabbed from other women. Photographed her. Lazy Saturday. Then raped her, strangled her, and then hung her by her neck from a pulley. And that was the come along that I was talking about. And what he would do is he would take and get them up to where, she could just barely maybe put her toes down to take off some of the pressure. It was a torture thing, basically. Mm-hmm. And he would just leave her hanging there. And then when he got done with her, he'd crank it a couple more times. Boom, you're not touching the ground. You're gonna die. This is also the one. Check this one out. He cut off her tits.
Yeah.
And made plastic molds of them as paperweights.
Yep. Your mom, they're on a mantle.
And a mantle. Did you ever have the bronze shoes?
No.
No?
Mm-mm.
My mom had my baby shoes bronze. That's what I picture in my head. When you see these just little bronze boobies, paperweights. And that he ended up tying her to a 6-cylinder car engine. How does one man take a 6-cylinder car engine and throw it over a fucking bridge?
Yeah.
Or at least into a river. I don't understand how that happens.
And not draw attention to himself.
Right. I mean, it was a little odd to me, but it said he did it. Next on the list would be Jan Susan Whitney. She was 23. Just driving along the road, had a little bit of car trouble. So on Interstate 5 between Salem and Albany, Oregon. This was November 26, 1968. He offered to drive her car to his home with the excuse of letting her call a tow truck while she was there. And, again, back then, in the 60s and 70s, there's a lot of hitchhiking. People were very, open to strangers.
Right.
Not so much now. When they get there, she's in the car. He takes a leather strap. I think it came from almost like a mail bag or something like that. Ties it around her neck. And then he attaches it into the door and shuts the door. She is stuck there. And then he proceeds to, rape her postmortem. Kept the body hanging from the pulley in his garage, which that was her next resting place. Say it was there for 5 days, just hanging there.
Mm-hmm.
And again, he would go down there, and he would dress her up. He would take photographs. He would have sex with her. This one, he also... he just made plastic molds of the last girl's breast. This is the one here that it's Whitney that he actually takes and cuts her breast off and then makes a mold and uses them as a paperweight. afterwards, he tied the body to a piece of railroad iron and threw it in the Willamette River along with Slauson's foot, so which had rotted. You know, he didn't keep it in the freezer. You know, apparently he left it out.
Right.
It got bad.
Or got freezer burnt.
He got freezer burnt. That's just disgusting. He did have a couple near misses. I believe it was Whitney. He goes on vacation. And he's got Whitney, Jan Susan Whitney. She's hanging up in his garage.
Mm-hmm.
There was a freak accident while he's on vacation with his family. Somebody had ran into his fucking garage with a car. And the cops, one of the neighbors called the cops. They seen it happen. They knew he wasn't home. And it said that a couple of the cops are like looking in, you know, trying to look in through the planks that were maybe damaged from the accident. But they couldn't really see a whole lot. They didn't get the vantage point that if they did, they would have seen Whitney hanging mm-hmm. there and it would have stopped at that point.
Right.
That was obviously not the case. He attempted to abduct a woman by the name of Sharon Wood. She was 24 at gunpoint from the basement floor of a parking garage. Now, Sharon, we watched a few documentaries about this wackadoo, and she says that, you know, she obviously was one of the ones that escaped. She says, you know, he tells her, you know, look, if you don't scream, I won't fucking shoot you. And then grabs a handful of hair and just starts repeatedly beating her head into the, you know, the concrete there. And I don't know if she started fighting, because Jerry's deal was, if any of these women put up a fight and took off running, he was not one to chase after them.
Right.
He would literally just hurry up, get in his car, and flee the area. He wasn't that kind of a guy. He would rather just grab you, and then that's it. If you get away, you're one of the lucky ones. And that's what happened with Sharon. That happened April 21st, 1969. And the very next day, he attempted to abduct a, some say 12 years old. This here states 15, Gloria Jean Smith. And he tried to abduct her, but there were some people around. Because now he's getting brave. He's doing this shit right out in the middle of the day. He would go to... The next lady that we're going to talk about, Linda Saley, he got to the point where he was taking, and you know, he'd get a fake badge and a fake security, you know, uniform and whatnot, and go about it that way. But Linda, she was 22, abducted from a shopping mall parking lot. He claims that he was a security guard. There's been a lot of shoplifting going on here, so I'm going to have to take you down to the station. Drives her straight to the fucking garage.
Yep.
And that's where he raped and strangled her and then played with her corpse. So it says, played with her corpse. What are you playing? Is it tea time?
Yeah, and then his dumbass took a picture and captured himself in the picture.
He does. He takes a picture and he has a mirror so he can, you know, take a picture down to reflect up into this woman, under this woman's dress and shit. Ends up getting his entire face in the frame.
Mm-hmm.
Dummy. He decided not to cut her breast off. And the reason being, they were too pink. They didn't have the discolor of the areola.
They were discolored.
They were. They were too pink, he said. Instead, he drove an electrical current through her body in an attempt to make it jump. Because he was an electrician. So he wired his chick up and then fired it up, which that failed. That did not work. Afterward, he tied the body to a car transmission. What, does he just have, like, engine blocks and transmissions just laying around? I don't get that. He tied it with a nylon cord and threw that in the Willamette River.
Probably goes to junkyards and buys them.
Ah, yeah, he could, I guess. He said after he would commit some of these murders, as you mentioned, he would take and dress up in high heels and masturbate. Mm-hmm. And in 1969, some local fishermen spotted the body of Saley and Sprinker in the Long Tom River. And that kind of got police on maybe a trail. So, right. Because a lot of these were, you know, university girls, you know, they were in college and whatnot. And so they decided to hit the nearby campuses and just, you know, start talking, asking these, you know, females about, you know, you ever seen any suspicious looking guy, you know, big fat guy dressed in women's clothes, wearing high heels. And they had, from talking to these girls at the campus, they found out that a few of them had interactions with a strange guy or a guy who kept calling them or trying to get dates with them and so on and so forth. And so that put them, you know, on his trail there. Brutus, he gave the police a false address, not even his real ass. So he's already fucking up. That increased their suspicions. You know, okay, you must have something to hide here.
Right.
And at his garage, they finally, you know, if I'm not mistaken, they finally got enough evidence. They went to his garage. He was there. They went to look around his garage, and they found some copper wire that they, you know, figured and determined that was literally cut, you know, with probably the same tool that was used to cut the cords for, you know, his other victims, and he was arrested with that. Now, here's where I say these nylon cords, Brutus is said to, you know, he sees the cops looking at these, you know, different, you know, ropes and things like that. And he's like, oh, you seem pretty interested in that. You want me to cut you a piece off? Well, that right there was the evidence they needed, because then they could tell if this was the same rope used in the, you know, the murders and whatnot. And well, that got him arrested.
Right.
He then calls his attorney. He was pulled over.
Yeah, with his wife in the car.
Yes, I think after that little rope incident, I think he started feeling like, oh, they're on to me.
Mm-hmm.
So he gathers up the wife, and they're heading towards Canada. And they said it's about 250 miles south, or just, you know, away from the border. They take and pull him over.
Oh, pull her over.
Or pull her over. Yeah, he was in the back, like
under
a coward,
blanket.
Under a blanket, trying to hide.
Right.
And so, yeah, that got him. And at that time, he was wearing some silk panties.
Yep.
And he said it just was felt so good, just comfy, cozy. And so that got him in there, and he eventually, for they say about 5 hours, just sit and confess to all the murders to his attorney.
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty much the end of the Brutus saga. It said while he was incarcerated, though, he would go down to the library, and he would, you know, request catalogs,
mm-hmm,
of women's shoes.
He'd order them.
Yeah, he'd order them through the prison library, and he would just have stacks of catalogs of women's shoes
and lingerie.
Yeah, and lingerie. And he said he wrote a lot of companies asking for these, you know, catalogs, and claimed that they were his substitute for pornography.
Yep.
And he would just sit there and go to town, do the old knuckle shuffle in the piss pump while looking into women's high heel shoes.
Yep.
And they said he filed for countless appeals, obviously, none of them were going to go very far.
And his wife left him and revoked all his rights to the kids.
Yep. They tried to get her as an accomplice.
Right.
But she was later found not guilty to being an accomplice, which she had stated, you know, when she became, you know, part of it. You know, they tried to say that she was part of it. She claimed her innocence from the beginning, and that was proven, you know, true. One of the appeals is that he included one appeal in which he alleged that a photograph taken of him with one of his victims' corpses could not prove his guilt because it was not the body of the person he was convicted of killing. And in 1995, the parole board told Brutus that he would never be released. Don't even try it. You're done. What was it that he said?
Oh, he said that he felt that he never hurt anybody because nobody ever complained.
No, nobody ever complained. He was like, you know, I don't really remember hurting anybody. He was like, I never got any complaints. That's because they're dead. They're knocked out. You know, they're all knocked out or dead. He did die in 2006 from liver cancer. Brutus, at the time of his death, was the longest incarcerated inmate at the Oregon Department of Correction. A total of 37 years he was locked up,
from
1969 into 2006. You ever watch Mindhunter? On Netflix? I think we started watching maybe a little bit of it, where they go into, you know, they try to, you know, catch these serial killers and whatnot. I think I've watched an episode or two. Actor Happy Anderson actually portrays him in season one in Mindhunter, and that would be episode 7 and 8 if you're interested in that. Actor Ted Levine based part of his performance in The Silence of the Lambs on Jerry Brutus. The American extreme metal band, which you heard during our break, The Macabre, had a song about Jerry, which you heard from their 2003 album, Murder Metal. So, an interesting guy. Very strange that, you know, he likes feet as much as he does. But anything you want to add to this, Mrs. Trans? This guy, I mean, he even looks creepy. And you watch some of these, you know, documentaries and they're talking to him. I think he made a statement like, oh, it must have been a slow Saturday night. And then just cracks up. Like,
yeah, they said he had no emotion at all when it came to
I mean, he had no remorse.
When he confessed.
Though. Yeah. Nothing. He just didn't care. And little Jerry, rest in peace.
Yeah.
Hey, we got we're coming up on about the end of this shindig, and I think we've decided that we're gonna do another. I guess you could say serial killer, but it was more he was a contract killer.
Yeah, that's what he started out as.
He started out as a contract killer. That would be the Iceman. We're going to talk about the Iceman. He was a mob or mafia hitman.
Yeah.
So it
you talk
what
about
he,
heartless.
Yeah, and what he did, I mean, you may think, oh, you know, talk about a mafia hitman on a horror-based podcast? No. Trust me, when you hear some of the shit that he would do, you will be horrified.
I wouldn't want to say heartless, but he has no emotions.
No, he had literally no emotions in doing this. I mean, it's going to be an interesting discussion, to say the least. So, the Iceman cometh next week on Night of Living Dreads podcast. All right. Thank you, Mrs. Dredd.
You're welcome.
You talked way too much this episode.
Shut up.
All right. Episode 35 in the bags. In the bags. We got two bags.
Yeah. One for each half.
One for each half. And I want to thank everybody for listening again. If you enjoy this little podcast, please spread it far and wide. See you next week. We'll be right back.
so scared? I know things no one knows. We're going to die.